Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Kelly, we've got SummerSlam taking shape. It kind of felt almost like a go-home show tonight with them throughout the process of Raw, talking about all the Raw-based matches, but also highlights of key matches, especially Roman Reigns and his battle against Jey Uso from SummerSlam. Does this just kind of overall feel like this episode brought home what SummerSlam is all about overall and made it seem like it's imminent, or could they have done more to build this up and make it feel like more than an ordinary pay-per-view?
It felt big to me. I actually, you say it felt like a go-home show. As they were hyping it, I looked at the date of it to see if I was wrong about about when it was.
Yep.
It really feels like the hard sell was on. There was one point between the Ciampa Reed match and the Cruz Priest match where there were no matches for 1 hour. And that's because they were doing the hard sell on this show. I don't think you could ask much more being this far out from a show. Not that we're far out from the show,
yep.
But I thought this show did a tremendous job of getting me interested in that show.
And what stood out to me is they didn't do anything that was like out of just the normal staying in the lines of the dotted road on the highway. Like, it was just a paint by numbers. We have confidence in our lineup and we're going to just march through, and we're going to add a little heat to the heels and a little shine to the baby faces and get you lined up for what you want to see, you know, and emphasize why you should be rooting for, you know, certain people to win over the other. And it wasn't like they weren't trying to reinvent anything. There was nothing meta. You know, Cody went out there and just cut pretty traditional babyface promo. Judgment Day, you know, across the board were nasty. And, you know, Dominic just, you know, Dominic being Dominic. It just seemed like, to me, the pieces are in place and they know it. And they're just sort of a confident stride through 3 hours of WWE current day programming, which, by the way, is pretty red hot. You know, I mean, it's beating just about every other show on television on the nights they run in the key demo, which is just crazy to say, but it is a streaming world right now. And they are drawing huge crowds. They're able to go to wide shots and break of sellouts. And this just felt like a company that kind of has figured out who their key wrestlers are and how to tell stories with them. I'll shine a spotlight after that kind of macro overview, and we can get more into that as we the big picture as we go. Just get into that closing angle with Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. I continue to be impressed with Finn Balor right now. And he addressed it. He said, I'm sick of losing. And he goes, it was driving me insane. And if you want to know what that feels like, it's like an itch, a seven-year itch. And they're playing off the 7 years ago Universal thing. And Balor just has, it just shows like when people get panicked over somebody losing who you don't want to lose, or they're jobbing this person out, or, you know, whatever it is. If you come back and WWE gives you room in a main event program to do what Finn Balor's doing, which is act like you've been a main eventer all along and act like you've never been a mid-carder. You've never lost matches without fanfare, because he has, you know, he's been lost in the mix for a while at times over these last 7 years. Fans will embrace the moment, and they did. And, you know, it helps to have a you know, really over babyface right now with the crowd singing his song and all that. And then you got this faction in Judgment Day who have grown to be the kind of the centerpiece act around which so much of Raw is built, which takes pressure off Cody Rhodes. It takes some pressure, even though he's involved in them right now, Seth Rollins. It just gives Raw, you know, these an array of wrestlers who are all different in this faction a chance to be involved in a lot of things, but weave throughout the show. And all four are over in their own way, and they all have interesting things going on. And then you add the dynamic between Finn and Priest that Seth played up and going, hey, even if you win, Reigns going to be super short because Priest's going to cash in because you know he will because you do the same thing. So he's creating dissension and adding another layer to the match. It's just, yeah, I mean, there's like nothing shocking happened tonight. They just marched through and did what you should do on one of the last shows before a big show.
Yeah, it was straightforward storytelling. And the contrast is funny because right now I'm doing a very slow rewatch of all the WWE pay-per-views because there are a bunch I missed in like the mid-aughts. And right now I'm in 01, and the last match I watched last night before I went to bed was the Duchess of Queensberry match, William Regal, where Chris Jericho peed in his tea. So slightly different Raw beat in those days.
Yes.
And yes, it love to go back and say, hey, you don't necessarily have to tell the story that way. yeah, I talked with Greg about it two episodes ago on Wrestling Night is America in America about Judgment Day and how early on we were just saying this faction is dead on arrival. Usually a faction doesn't get the chance to be a reclamation project. They just, if it doesn't work right away, they break them up. And now they're appointment TV. And yeah, they bookended this show. They were everything on this show. Rhea, the only one who's been getting cheered, did probably the biggest thing she could maybe try to do to get booed significantly.
Yep.
That was a strong injury angle, by the way, and Liv's cell job is my favorite cell job she has ever done.
I agree.
In any context.
Yes. I was happy to compliment Liv for something because usually I'm kind of hard on her for her, you know, kind of silly cartoonish ring entrance and the laughing for no reason when she comes out and all that. It was like it wasn't cartoonish. It felt believable. I think that's how we'd all yell if that was real and our arm got stomped in a chair. We'd be like, no, don't touch my arm. It hurt. You know, like, but it didn't. Yeah. It just, and I was thinking the same thing. Fans have wanted to cheer Rhea Ripley. And they've worked hard to get them to boo her. That angle helped, and Liv played the sympathetic baby face in peril really well.
Yeah, and as far as Finn goes, it's funny that this guy who's so soft-spoken and seems so easygoing and friendly with everybody, he's always miscast when he's a baby face. He just likes to go in there and wear the black hat. And when they hired him, they knew that. They knew that's the reason, that's what they wanted him for. He was the leader of Bullet Club. He was nasty. He was mean.
It was a side thing. They thought he was too good of a wrestler and not big enough to be a heel, even though he, as you're just saying, it absolutely was the right thing for him to be a heel in this company. And now he is.
Yeah. And he's playing the character, the version of the heel he's playing now is closer to the Bullet Club version of Prince Devitt. Mm-hmm. than he has played in the entirety of his tenure with this company. And, lo and behold, the reason you wanted him is exactly the role that he's in. Maybe you shouldn't be surprised by that, but I'm sure internally some are. But I just love that they plugged him in, and he can get it's not going to be the main event. Reigns will be, but... Yeah. He can get that championship match on SummerSlam, not even one of the middling pay-per-views. You can plug him into this, and it's working. It's hot.
When this seemed like the direction they were going, and when it became clear it was like, okay, they just figure they got enough other matches. You know, Logan Paul will be on the show. Brock and Cody's going to co-headline. Roman and Jay probably lead the match. We didn't know, but we got it pretty quickly, a quick turnaround here. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. They're like, okay, they're not going to give Seth an A-level challenger. It's just Finn Balor. Been there, done that, but okay. It's going to be fourth or fifth on the show in terms of the selling point. That was my thought, you know, however many weeks ago, you know, a handful of weeks ago. And now I'm like, they heated this thing up. Like, I mean, they're not going to, and it isn't bigger than Roman and Jay. But they could end the show with this, and I don't think people would be like, what are they thinking? Like, I think people would be into it because if you got Dominic running around at ringside and Rhea Ripley running around and I mean, and then the tease of the Money in the Bank and perhaps a cash-in, I think fans in the stadium at Ford Field and I think fans at home watching would actually accept this match going on last and not just think, what's WWE thinking? That's, it's all downhill after Reigns and Jay or Cody and Lesnar. I think they can pull that off. I don't think they're going to. But that's a testament to the job they've done to hype this. And mostly, this Finn Balor that everybody thought WWE was getting, now emerging after years of you know, misuse or being underutilized, as you pointed out. And it's not like he didn't have it in him, but it's not like the people in charge in WWE, Vince McMahon, and probably some of the key writers, had even seen any of that to know better.
Yeah, it's, as you say, it won't go on last. Although, if Reigns and Jay is in the middle of the show, we will know how that match is going to end. And then we will know it'll either be this one or Cody Brock going on last. But, yeah, it's, I don't know. It does feel like that extremely strong upper mid card of the Attitude Era and just beyond, where, I mean, they have the wonderful problem of having too many matches that could main event the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's pause here, introduce ourselves, and then we'll get to caller and email input also on the program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 24th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. I've been covering professional wrestling in various media formats for over 35 years, and I appreciate you choosing to listen to our coverage of Raw. And we'll be by, as always, later this week with Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision Post Shows. And if you are catching up on those or you're just discovering us, be sure to subscribe. If you're live streaming the show, be sure to subscribe on your podcast app of choice, searching Wade Keller, and subscribing to this, The Red Logo Show, our post shows that are live. You can stream them live, or you can download the shows later on the podcast feed. Also, The Blue Logo Show will pop up. That's our regular main podcast, the flagship, along with some interviews and other special features and flashbacks. And that is also free to sign up for. So when you search Wade Keller, subscribe to both. And while you're at it, search PW Torch, and you'll see a couple logos pop up for the PW Torch Daily Cast. And then a charcoal-colored logo, that's a PW Torch VIP free sample feed. When you subscribe to that for free, if you use the Apple Podcast app, you can upgrade within the Apple Podcast app and subscribe to all the VIP shows, including these shows put on that feed with the ads and plugs removed. But you also get all the VIP shows. So four different podcasts that you can sign up for, get some free VIP samples by searching PW Torch. And when you subscribe to the Daily Cast, you get to listen to a different show every day of the week in our lineup. One of them is PWT Talks NXT. And that brings me to my co-host, the other voice you've heard on the show so far, Kelly Wells, a long-running NXT correspondent and contributor and analyst here at PW Torch. Also follows New Japan closely. And we welcome him here on the Raw Post Show and other post shows periodically also to lead the NXT beat. Kelly, welcome back.
Always good to be here. Yes, I cover PWT Talks NXT. Fun stuff there with Judgment Day being a focal point right now. I also do NXT 8 years back, and we are at the very beginning of the Finn Balor era, which is kind of fun, the way that it breaks down.
Awesome,
with Finn.
Yeah.
And yeah, just a cool little bit of timing there. And, of course, as you said, New Japan. I am a New Japan completist. There have been six shows so far in the G1. I have seen them all. It is the kind of show where they do 20 shows in about 28 nights. And when they have a day off, I get mad. Like, I don't have 3 hours of New Japan to watch today. Tournament's been okay so far, not as good as some in years past, but a lot of those bullets still left in the chamber.
Yeah, so go VIP to your NXT 8 years back. I want to talk to you more about that, the early Finn, and also I want to talk a little bit about Dominic last week and get your thoughts for those who didn't hear them last week. Get your thoughts on that, including how they framed it on Raw tonight. But first things first, I want to give out the phone number and email for our listeners. You can email the show if you're live streaming, or as you watch Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, even if you're not going to listen to the live stream, but you're going to listen to the show later on download, you can still contribute to the show with thoughts and emails and or thoughts and questions via email. That email is WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can also call us right now if you are live streaming the show. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558 When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be brought onto the show. That'll flag you on our switchboard. Otherwise, you can call that number and just listen in. You can always live stream the show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. Just navigate to the live stream. You can also find links at the top and bottom of my TV reports at WTorch.com. And there's some other places that changed their name that we may or may not continue to use. We'll see. You can usually find a link there too. But it's just sort of become this weird embarrassment. That's a whole other thing. Speaking of Twitter X. Kelly.
What do you even say? It's hard to watch.
I'm trying to think of an analogy of just like an institute, like, Sears Tower was trending a couple days ago and they're like, nobody's going to call it anything but Sears Tower, even if someone else takes over the naming of that skyscraper in Chicago. And it's like, Corey Graves called it X Tonight, but it's like, I almost can't think of a more dumb name to rename Twitter to than X. Yeah. Microsoft holds the trademark, so it's going to – I don't even know it's going to happen because of Xbox and all that. It applies to more things, I guess. It's just so dumb. And Twitter, it's like – oh, I don't even know. there's a story about Elon, didn't he co-found PayPal? Is that right?
Ooh.
There's some story about Elon wanting to change the name of PayPal to PayPal X and then X or something like that. I don't know. I just saw it peripherally. And I'm like, he tried to do this before? And tried to turn a brand that turned into a verb, I'm going to PayPal you money, into and get rid of the name. And now he's doing the same thing with Twitter. It's I don't even know.
Oh, who's going to not say tweet? Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yep. And it's X is, it's either going to be seen as Xbox or porn. Or just really outdated, X Games. Yeah, 96 or whenever that happened. Like, it's just, anyway, no one wants to hear us rant about that, although it's too late. We have for a minute here. So let's get back to Raw Talk. All right, so before we go to caller and email input, I do want to look at the what's going on with Finn Balor early in NXT, and I want you to talk a little bit about what could have happened the last 7 years based on what we're seeing now that could have been a better path for Balor and given and allowed him to contribute more to WWE. And granted, there's been injuries and return to NXT and all kind. It's been a weird journey. But had this been the Finn Balor that they allowed him to be early on, was he ready for that? And would he have been a much more valuable player for WWE all along, or is this sort of an all's well that ends well type situation?
Both. He would have been more valuable to them if they had had him do this out of the gate on the main roster. But I think it seems like it's fine that they were able to keep him hot enough for this number of years to be able to be put in this position. It's not like the Demon didn't get his pops at times. I was at TLC 1 year when they had to call the audible where it was instead of the Demon versus Sister Abigail was what it was going to be. He got COVID and it was Finn and AJ instead. And I think that pop for Finn is one of the loudest I've ever heard. So like, I know that he can draw people in to some degree, but it just seems like he's so much more valuable in this role, no matter how high or low he is on the card. So NXT, after going far into a different direction, has kind of settled into being very, very close to what they were at the beginning. It is a lot of people who are very green being put on TV, but they are trying a lot of things with them and doing, I don't want to say frequent face heel changes, but if they have any doubt, they'll keep somebody down there and turn them just to see what they have. They did that with Zoe Stark. She was a baby face for quite a while. And at the time where we thought, well, they're probably going to move her up. And I wanted to see what she could be as a heel because she can be so badass. They turned her. And I think that's something that the company is doing a little better now. They're testing the waters to see what they have. So even if they had wanted to bring Zoe up babyface first, they better just see what they've got. And Finn, in that first run, before he's brought up, he never turns. in the second run in NXT, he's actually mostly a tweener, but he works on both sides of the aisle there. I think that if they had tried him as a heel and if they had seen what they had, they might have brought him up as a heel. They would have at least considered it.
Okay, let's shift to Dominic for a moment. Kelly, just talk about your reaction to Dominic winning the NXT North American title, and if you thought having Dominic come into NXT and win in any fashion, obviously he had three people helping him, was a boost to NXT. I mean, viewership is up now that the title's getting attention on Raw. The demo ratings are up. I mean, Dominic, the tie-ins between Raw and NXT have been working. And then they got the Great American Bash coming up. That's next Tuesday, right?
It's actually a weekend one.
Yeah, I know the press conference coming up this week. So they've been building up the audience leading to the Great American Bash theme show. And it seems like the crossover with the Judgment Day has worked. Obviously Seth coming in, for the match with Braun Breaker is the only show that drew better than Dominic did this week, if I'm recalling the numbers. So talk a little bit about what you thought of Judgment Day's involvement in NXT and the Dominic win, and then bring it all the way to tonight and what you thought of the follow-up and how Dominic reacted, if it was kind of in the realm of what you were thinking he would do.
Oh, boy, if you told me 2 weeks ago that Sami Zayn was going to challenge for an NXT championship, I don't know what I would have thought was going on.
Yeah.
But that is what's happened there. Their work down there has elevated the show and has elevated the people that they've shared the screen with. They have found little excuses, strained in some cases, to put Rhea Ripley on with so many different women that are in the division, just to have them get something out of that scene, just to rub elbows with her. They've done a lot of that, just had people had small transitory scenes just to kind of to immerse them into NXT, yes, but also to have the young talent kind of watch them firsthand. So that's been kind of cool. Very funny what they did with Dominic, especially since Wes held this championship for so long. He had an open challenge. He's the longest holder of that championship ever. And to have him lose it on TV to somebody like Dom is just a tremendous troll job. It's just a hilarious thing to do. And even if that's something they did to help promote the upcoming Great American Bash, because right now, as it stands, it's Dominic defending that. But I think it'll become a triple threat. I think Wesley will find his way into that match tomorrow night. That's what I expect to happen there. At the end of that match, it was just laughter on my part. Like, oh my God, they actually went ahead and did it. I shouldn't have been stunned. And earlier in the show, I just started getting the feeling like this could be it. But at first I was just saying, well, this is obviously just a short thing for them to drop down and do this. But it was just earlier in that very show where I thought it was possible. I think that it was one of those really good sacred cows worth killing, that long championship reign to get something out of that, because Dom is just, he's drawing reactions that nobody else is. And the crowd reactions they went to after that title change were hilarious. Like, normally there's somebody like really posturing in the crowd trying to get on screen so badly, but it was just a lot of genuine shock on people's faces. Just like Undertaker, Ellis Mabeh, mouth open, those kind of reactions. That's what happened here. And I thought it was all the better for it.
What do you think of Dominic? What do you think of where he is? Is this going to run out of steam? Is this a heel of the future if he keeps getting better? It's hard to even come up with a comparison to what we're seeing with Dominic. And I mean, like a year ago, nobody would have thought, like, Yeah. Could have I mean, I will say this, like, you know, for years we complained about Roman Reigns being miscast as a babyface and being lousy at it, and Vince McMahon putting him in positions that were uncomfortable and clearly didn't work. And I was like, there's some evidence Roman's going to make a great heel. And he has. And on a completely different level here, just this son of Rey Mysterio that no one was taking seriously, I was saying before he turned, but they were kind of hinting that maybe there'd be the teen, you know, kind of the rebellious kid, you know, turns on his dad. I was like, I see something in him. There's a little hints where I think his facial expressions and stuff can turn into this effective punk heel that fans would like to boo. But this is beyond what I imagined. I mean, I thought they were going to head this way, but I didn't think he'd be like one of the main reasons that Judgment Day has been elevated to the point that now Finn Balor has raised his game. Damian Priest has raised his game. Rhea Ripley feels like a bigger star. I mean, everybody's helping everybody. It's an ensemble. But if you subtract Dominic from the mix the last 3 months, I mean, I don't know that Priest and Ripley and Balor are at the level that they're at. So that's my long question with my own commentary. But what do you think about what we've seen with Dominic, and where does he fall in the context of wrestling in history or elsewhere outside of the United States or anything? Is there anything analogous?
No, and that's one of the first things I was going to say, is that I don't know. We've never seen somebody quite like him. Like just so many different aspects to who he is, being the son of a guy who worked almost entirely babyface, like 95% of his career, 90% of his career. And so like, why is this part of him? Guess it could be his real father, Eddie Guerrero, according to canon.
I mean, I watch him and I'm like, maybe so. I mean, like,
got the hair. He took his hair. So
In the old days, like, because a fan held up a sign, you know, said, you know, Eddie Guerrero that or whatever. And I'm like, you know, 35 years ago, before anybody could know anything about wrestling, like it was, you know, the wrestling magazines played along with storylines, the insider newsletters, you know, Torch and Observer were like hard to find, you know, you had to look in the back pages of a magazine before I started taking out full page ads in the magazines and in Sporting News and USA Today, which spread, you know, the insider news perspective to a larger and new audience. Before all that, nobody knew anything. They could have told the story and fans would be speculating about whether Dominic really is Eddie's son, the way this is going out, and you know, him doing the Three Amigos and having the mullet and just the body language stuff. He feels more like Eddie's son than Ray's son. And I mean, it's not accidental either, because Eddie was a great heel and Dominic might be a great heel. You know what I mean? So they're just playing up, they're doing the same mannerisms and the same thing. And then, you know, you just wonder, and this will get way down the line, does Dominic have a really good babyface run in him years from now? And I don't want to get too far ahead because he's still got a lot to prove, but go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect in the future from this character. Like, does he settle into a Miz role where he has to lose most of the time? Or is that even maybe what he's kind of doing? Or is that what he should be doing?
Yeah.
Or should be, I mean, people are saying, now they're thinking of him as a future world champion, and I
get in line behind Kelly Knight, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Vince Russo's hot potato championship era, he might have already been champion. Who knows? But in this era of much fewer title changes, I think it'll be a steeper road to climb for singles championship in the company. So they trust him there, and maybe that's a dry run for more. But I don't know what the height of this character should be. I just don't know, and I don't know if they know. I think they're happy to just ride the wave and see what happens and continue to put him in high-profile feuds. It came off of one with Cody that was really odd, just way odder than we all thought it was going to be, even though we all knew he was probably going to lose that feud. And just, I don't know. He's another good problem to have. I don't think I see him at the top, but I think it's got steam for a while. But as I said with Greg, they could go further with this tease of the breakup of Judgment Day and break them up and see what happens. But God, I hope they don't. I just really, really like what they're getting out of this group right now. And I think as long as the group is strong, so will they all be as solo acts.
And I think they can just enjoy the moment and not worry about where Dominic's going to be in 6 months or 18 months or 4 years. Just ride this out and see what happens. I mean, it's such a pleasant surprise and that he's just a natural at this. And, I mean, I do think people are buying tickets to sing Seth's song. I think people are also buying tickets to Raw to boo Dominic the second he opens his mouth on the microphone. And I don't blame him. I mean, WWE is a live event that – it part of the experience is crowd participation, and they know that, and they play into it deliberately. It doesn't always work, and sometimes it can get a little annoying. But it with Dominic, people are, I believe, genuinely paying money to go see him. Ashley, our on-site correspondent last Friday, talked about how at NXT at Full Sail, when Dominic last week was going to be on the in the main event, there were kids who were crying because they didn't get in. People were camping out at 9 a.m. to get into the taping or the TV event. And when they ran out of seats, there were kids crying and a kid mad at his dad. And I wanted to boo Dominic. Like, there's kids who just want to pay money to be part of a crowd booing Dominic. So it's fun. I don't want to spend too much more time raving about how what a pleasant surprise this is. But it is fun when something completely unexpected gets over this much. And it's deserved, you know, and Dominic's clearly having fun doing this. I mean, you know, the facial expressions are great, and, you know, I'm going to be a fighting champion, and now he's not even scared when Ripley issues a challenge because it seems like he's buying his own BS now. You know, like, well, I got my crew helping me win, so I got nothing to worry about. It's just been a real fun thing to watch.
Yeah, and they still get a little bit of mileage out of the hard time he did in prison.
Yep.
They don't do it as much anymore, but it's still hilarious when they do.
Yeah.
Because, and it's maybe even funnier now because it's wrestling. So you assume that is all in the past. So dropping it on us now is very funny. He's been a real revelation, and so much. I'm watching more main roster now than I have for, because I watched every main roster show they put out, period, from like 1990 to about 2005 or six. And then it kind of thinned out, and in the aughts was pretty light in the teens. And I'm watching more than I have in probably about 15, 20 years. And he's definitely one of the things I look forward to most, and one of the reasons that I'm enjoying it so much.
I remember former Minnesota Viking running back Robert Smith on KFAN. I don't know if it was like in 99 or if it was in 2002, but there was a conversation where they were asking him, what are we going to call this decade? I'm not going to call it the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, that's easy. What are we going to call this 2000 to 2009 or 10 period? And Robert Smith said, oh, the aughts. And it was like, no, come on, no one's going to call it that. And yet we kind of do. I mean, I don't very often, but when I hear it, it's like I hear it often. I'm like, yeah, the aughts. It's just like –
that's what I say 100% of the time. I don't think it's because of Robert Smith, but there is a chance that I heard that same interview.
Yes. I had not heard that before, and I'm like, well, maybe. I mean, I call it the 2000s, and I call it the 2010s, and I call it the 2020s. That's sort of my go-to phrase, but I'm not, like, against the aughts. I just – it's just when I hear that, whenever I hear the aughts, I always think of Robert Smith because he's the first person. He was a real – like, he was great on the radio locally here because he was so, so good. Like, not only talking football, he's just a smart, like, radio-friendly athlete. And he could do interviews with the host and just talk about football, but other things too. And they always kind of, you know, quizzed him on different things outside of football too. So, yeah, that always sticks with me when I hear the odds.
Yeah, and smart enough to get out of out of football as a running back before the real bad stuff started to happen to his body.
It kept happening. I mean, he's like, I got enough money, and every 10th time I hold the ball, I'm tearing up my knee ligaments, and I want to be able to walk when I'm 60. So, yeah, I mean, he had more left in the tank, but, man, every time he got tackled out of bounds, I just, you know, you'd get scared that this is going to be another tear. And I've never gone through that kind of rehab for a knee, but I can totally understand someone going, this is it. I don't want to go through this again. Anyway, let's shift to phone calls. If you want to get in line on the phone, on the phone lines, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. All right, let's go to first, Charles in D.C. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, I'm calling from Mexico City, and I actually saw Rey Mysterio close out the Super Show here in Mexico City.
Sweet.
Roman Reigns versus Rey Mysterio was the headliner, and everybody booed Dominic Mysterio. Like, he was the last person in the ring, and people stayed extra time to boo Dominic. And the result, it's a spoiler, but Dominic cost Rey Mysterio the championship versus Rey Mysterio, and just everyone booed Dominic. He really had the huge pop, and he was like the number one heel in WWE.
Yeah, I'm not at all surprised. That is awesome. What brings you to Mexico City? Just WWE, or are you there for other reasons now?
I'm doing an art residency here in Mexico City. I'm originally from Washington, D.C., and I got to catch up on some Lucha Libre while I was here. The excitement, I was in the nosebleed seats. I got tickets last minute, but the stadium was packed from bottom to top. Every single seat was filled, and everyone was booing Dominic. The LWO had a pretty big pop, but Dominic's pop was bigger than Rey Mysterio's. I couldn't believe it.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. What struck you about the crowd in Mexico City compared to United States and Canada and even the UK? Was there anything about how they're reacting to the WWE product that you experienced in person that stands out as different?
Well, they have a long tradition of wrestling here, and I was adding one and two together and seeing how much the Guerrero family had a history here in Mexico. There was huge chance. It was interesting, a Spanish-speaking audience saying, "This is awesome, this is awesome," with an accent. That was really surprising to me. They are diehard fans, you know. I think the people that should be booed are booed. The people that should be cheered are being cheered all the way down the line. They opened the show with Cody Rhodes versus Money in the Bank. I'm losing his name right now.
Damian Priest.
So Cody Rhodes went over Damian Priest, but they made sure that all their Latin stars were positioned in the show. So Damian Priest had a huge match. Rey Mysterio, of course, headline. Dominic had a match with Seth Rollins, that was the opening was Cody versus Dominic. I mean, Cody versus Priest, and then halfway through the show was Dominic versus Seth Rollins, and then they ended off with Rey Mysterio. So the Judgment Day was all throughout the show. They interfered with the matches. They were just excellent. I felt like it was the 90s and NWO was back.
Wow.
I've been a fan for a really long time.
Was there anybody on that
question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, was there anybody that got a reaction that surprised you either more or less, you know, that it was either more or less of a reaction than you would have thought if you were in somewhere in the United States? Besides the ones you already talked about, obviously, you know, with Ray, obviously, going to be mega over in the narrative.
Shotzi. I don't know if Shotzi had a Latin background. I know she's from California. I saw the new haircut, but people were cheering Shotzi's name, which was interesting. When I heard there was a triple threat for the women's title, it was Asuka, Charlotte Flair, and I thought Bianca Belair would come out, but actually Shotzi came out, and she took the pin from Asuka. They put all the belts on the line, too. That was pretty interesting. So the Super Show in Mexico City pretty much was like a night of champions of sorts.
You still there?
Yep,
I can hear you, Charles.
So, my question was the European title. So I was a big fan in the 90s where, like, D'Lo Brown would get the European title, and I saw – Triple H get the European title. And I'm thinking that, like, this North American title could turn into the European title and really elevate the lower mid-card. And I think Dominic could be the champion of the lower mid-card. Do you think he should start – my question is, do you think he should start defending the championship on Raw? And it was really interesting to see the Judgment Day have so much gold. Everybody had a title or a briefcase. And Finn Balor was not on the – he was not in Mexico. That was a surprise for me that he didn't show up.
Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, Kelly, and talk about that. Obviously, more titles devalues the existing title, so it's not always a good thing when you add a title to the mix. But it does work, as Charles points out, for Judgment Day to be, you know, there's a Money in the Bank briefcase, and Rhea's a champion, and now Dominic's a champion, and Balor is vowing he will be champion. It gives them, you know, extra oomph. It gives them extra credibility. Should that NXT North American title, I mean, is there any downside to Dominic taking it with him everywhere as long as he holds it and hold it for a while? And be defending it on Raw, be defending it on house shows.
Maybe for a few months. When he won it, I thought for sure that he would just lose it back at Great American Bash. Well, first I thought he won't win it. And then when I realized it was a possibility, I said, well, they could just have him win it and then drop it 9 days later, 10 days later at the Bash.
Yeah.
And now that the Bash is upon us, and now that he's done what he's done on the main roster and, like, had that visually, it makes me think maybe he's going to hold it a little longer. I don't know that I would put another singles championship on the main show. I think they do well with what they've got. I don't know that they need one. But if they want one that kind of pardon me for even bringing up the championship, but the 24/7 championship gave something to do to some of the wrestlers that otherwise were not even getting TV time. And if the North American championship could kind of do that, then that would be fine. But then how do you define that division other than kind of just quietly saying, these are the guys who don't get to win very much. This is their championship. So I think that the title has more value on NXT. NXT does have enough guys at any given time because they're always trying so many different stars that I can see two championships having been – it's never felt like it was too many since they had it. Three was pushing it, but they were trying to do a cruiserweight, like, actual division. But the North American Championship won out, of course. I hadn't considered it. I don't think that it would be a bad thing for Dominic to hold it for a while and for it to be a sub-story on NXT about how everybody's annoyed that Dominic, of all people, is holding their belt hostage.
Yeah.
Perfect guy for them to get up in arms about doing that. And then somebody could really get a rub from being the one to finally wrest it from his waist.
Let me go back to Charles for anything else he might want to bring up here. Go ahead, Charles.
No problem. You asked if anyone had a pop or had less than a pop. Austin Theory was kind of flat. He had a United States Championship match against the head of the LWO. I forget his name.
Santos Escobar.
Santos Escobar, his pop wasn't as big as I thought it would be, and the match was kind of flat. To see Santos Escobar, someone that's from Mexico, waving a Mexican flag, he didn't get as much a pop that I thought he would have, and then Austin Theory didn't get much of a pop too. And I feel like he's holding the U.S. title hostage, and I think that, like, Dominic Mysterio holding that belt could challenge people like LA Knight. And really, even if he goes 50-50, it'll give value to the lower mid-card. And I think that's what was so strong about the late 90s. The lower mid-card was strong. The D'Lo Browns, the Mark Henrys, the Triple H's, the X-Pac holding that European title really made the lower mid-card matches matter.
Kelly, talk about that. Definitely. You talked about how long you were watching in a concentrated, consistent fashion the main roster there. What do you think about that comparison?
Well, I think that it's apt. That is a time where I thought they were really pushing it with the number of titles. I would have been anti-European title, but they started out by putting it on British Bulldog and Owen Hart, two of my very favorite wrestlers. So I was like, well, I'll give it a leash for now because guys that I really like are holding championships. But yeah, I've looked at the lineage of that title a few times, and some of it is just like, yeah, this was really good stuff. And some of it is like, wow, why did they not get rid of the championship before they started giving it to guys like that? But yeah, it was, I think that the North American Championship could be that on the main roster, but it has become such a workhorse title, such an important title and a title of pride in NXT that hopefully they would know what they were sacrificing just to get a little bit of name value on that championship when they could, if they wanted, just create another championship.
All right, very good. Charles, anything else you want to bring up or share from your experience in Mexico City or about Raw tonight?
Sure. Last question. Why do you think – so Paul Heyman was in Mexico City as well, and he interfered in the match as well. And I was thinking about Cody Rhodes opening and Roman Reigns closing. Do you think there's a reason why Paul Heyman is still carrying two belts that aren't – in rotation anymore? I think that goes into the extinct belt conversation, but also opportunity for Cody Rhodes after his bout with Brock Lesnar. Do you think he might try to take one of those belts that Roman's carrying, one of the three, or are the other two obsolete? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I you know, when they introduced Seth's belt, I was just kind of hoping, you know, they introduced a new belt for Roman and there's just one belt, and that just seems to make sense. It feels tidy, and I don't see any reason to carry around multiple belts representing a singular title based on SmackDown. Kelly?
I think that they think that the visual is more powerful, that it makes it look even bigger. That would be my guess.
Don't they know what bothers us, though? Don't they care?
Historically, they have not cared too much if they were bothering me. I'll say that. I'll just say that I think when Roman loses that championship, we will stop seeing those on TV.
Yeah. Yep. That makes sense. Yeah. I don't have a good answer for you. Actually, I'll ask around a little bit and see if they're, you know, if they thought about that, or if there's plans, and if I get any information, Charles, I'll certainly pass it along. Charles, would you mind, by the way, I don't know if you're able to, but send a written report on the show. We didn't get any reports from Mexico City. It'd be awesome to be able to publish that on pwtorch.com. And if you could piece together from memory the matches and what happened in them.
Will do. I'll send it in tomorrow.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Anything else, Charles,
Thank
you want to bring up?
Just go VIP. Make sure you subscribe.
I love it. Thanks, Charles. Enjoy your stay in Mexico City. That's awesome you get a chance to do that.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was unexpected, and that's super cool. Hearing from a VIP member, Charles, attending in Mexico City. By the way, if you attend any WWE live events, any pro wrestling major events or TV tapings, we welcome your reports for pwtorch.com. You can send them to pwtorch@pwtorch.com. That's the easiest email to remember. And we'll see that. You can also just send it to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com to our podcast email here that we monitor, and that works too. But yeah, just, you know, run down the show, say who beat who, and add some details and thoughts and on crowd reactions and if the match was good and that kind of thing. And you know, we've been publishing arena reports for going back to the late 1980s when people would send them in postal mail envelopes on a typewriter, and then I'd retype them into the newsletter. I did the newsletter even before I had a computer. I used the typewriter. It's just crazy, all the media that I've been through. And so we've got, you know, great history covering house shows, and they're less important than they used to be, but they're still really interesting to get reports on because, you know, they just do different things than they do on TV. We also, by the way, at pwtorch.com publish our house show reports from our early years running a website. So we go back 20 years and pull up some of those house show reports, and you can find them in the Torch Flashback section or on the main listing when we post them. So it's one of the reasons to go to pwtorch.com every day, because we don't just have the splashy clickbait headlines that, you know, frankly, 14 out of the top 17 pro wrestling websites are based on. We have breaking news, original content that comes from my sources in wrestling, including the LA Knight story that I reported that got picked up everywhere over the weekend, and much more. You know, news on CM Punk and how things are going for him behind the scenes on Collision, and we've got a detailed ratings breakdowns with some stats that you won't find anywhere else, and so much more. So check out pwtorch.com regularly if you're not, and contribute if you attend a live event, and send in a written report. Kelly, anything else from Charles's call that you want to bring up, or should we just move on?
I just thought that was a pleasant surprise as well. When was this, do you know what night the show was that he's talking about? I guess I don't know which night
it was over the week. Yeah, I'm not sure which night it was. When he sends in the report, I'm sure he'll date it.
Yeah, that's very cool. I just, I'm not hip to the super shows and to the live schedule. So very interesting stuff and fun to be in a crowd down there. Wrestling crowds in every country are so different. And that's
why I asked. Yeah.
Fun, to watch like a Japanese crowd and a British crowd, especially. They're great and they're hilarious. Just so many great different, crowds around the world.
WWE sent us a press release earlier today talking about WWE delivers record-breaking live events in Mexico and touted, you know, the different records that they broke over the weekend for their events on Saturday and Sunday night. So you can check that out, too, at pwtorch.com. We've got the full press release published. Okay, so let's head over to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, welcome to the show. What is on your mind about Raw tonight?
So I think what I want to get into really is first was Rhea Ripley attacking Liv, and then Liv is legitimately hurt, so she's going to be out for a while, so that's fine. And I was thinking to myself, too, now that – so – because before I was like, okay, what are you going to do with SummerSlam with Rhea Ripley? Because I first thought that was going to be Raquel, but then he took Raquel out. That's obviously Liv, then the Liv is out. So what – I think is Raquel going to show back up next week then, if that's the case, because – there isn't anyone credible right now for Rhea Ripley beyond them too. So now that I heard that Liv is legit injured, which sucks. She took over Raquel last week, so that was a plate injury as well. But then that was just on Twitter saying that Liv has Raquel has a legit injury as well. So what's going on here? Yeah. What's going to happen with Rhea Ripley headed into SummerSlam at this point?
Good question. They're having to augment things. Liv Morgan last week talking about that she tore up her shoulder last week on Raw, and so you know setting this up as a match was obviously more an angle. She was able to go through with it. Kelly, what do you think is what's the lay of the land offer for Rhea Ripley at this point?
So the only thing I can say is that she has been on TV with a lot of different people in NXT. She has been kind of running down the division there for being soft and weak, in terms of kayfabe, of course, but has been on screen with a lot of them. She had a scene with Lyra Valkyria last week calling her toughness into question, and Bruce Hazelwood just messaged me and said, hey, you can always mention this on the podcast, and now I've got a reason. Earlier in the day, it was announced that Rhea is going to have a match with Lyra Valkyria tomorrow night on NXT. So Judgment Day still going strong there, still going down to Florida every single week and doing that show. So I don't know that it'll be Lyra specifically. I don't know who that person is, but they could come out of this NXT storyline by promoting somebody to the main roster. Who is that person is a great question, because I don't know that any baby faces are overly ready. Like, they could move up Roxanne Perez, but I think that she's got a lot of work to do on the mic. as good as she is in the ring at such a young age. I think somebody like Thea Hale is probably peaking, but I think that she's going to be an extremely entertaining lower mid-card gatekeeper. But yes, that when she gets to the main roster, maybe I'd be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll be thrilled because she's hilarious. She's a good reason to watch the show. So if it's not Raquel, and the smart money does say Raquel, they could be doing something in NXT that is going to create her next opponent.
Kyle, back to you. What do you think?
I'm just thinking if they do that, how will anyone care? That's the other. I think that's going to be the thing that's going to be interesting, because I like if that does happen, which my whole thought process, as I said before, was I really thought they were going to do Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley all the way back in November. I thought that's what they were leading to. I would never guess you'd still do this Trish Stratus Becky Lynch feud. I'm surprised, and I can't believe it's still going on. So the fact that now we're in this situation is kind of unfortunate for Rhea Ripley. This is not what I thought they were going to do months after her winning the championship from at WrestleMania. Is not what I expected, but I don't know. I guess we have to wait and see what they do. But it's going to be hard for me to care at this point if she's going to be facing someone from NXT that is completely random and this is, I don't know. That was second that happens, but I don't know. We'll see. I'll get to talk about Becky and Trish and all that stuff too. Here, now I like the fact that Becky won again at one from Zoe Stark, but then I also hear other people saying that Zoe shouldn't be losing, and it was a stupid thing for Zoe to lose. I was like, well, look, it's I know people are upset that Zoe lost, but it's like, Zoe's not the actual target. It's really Trish Stratus but now that the match is going to happen, do you think they're going to add some type of stipulation to this match or something? Because they can't, because clearly everyone's having a regular one-on-one match versus, Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar as another regular match. And now with the Zoe Becky thing, I don't know what match they make the match official for SummerSlam, but I'm sure it will be. What could be different with this match than their match at Night of Champions or if anything? So what do you think about that?
Kelly, I'll throw to you first on that. What do you think?
Oh, hair versus hair. that would draw people in, because neither one of these girls seems like they could lose their hair. That could put it on. And the reason that I arrived there, and I don't believe they'll do it, is because this match tonight was one of those funny stipulations where, like, the stipulation is so enormous for one person that it's essentially a spoiler. Like, there's no way that Zoe
right,
can win.
Exactly.
Because Becky's not going to tattoo that on herself. Yeah. You can't go back from that. I'll also talk about Zoe shouldn't be losing. I'm not against her losing this kind of match. And she's in there working with Trish and Becky. She's clearly in a place where they like her, because otherwise she wouldn't be in this position. And so I think she's gaining a lot from – she gains more from losing to Becky with a match that had stakes in the stead of somebody like Trish than she would gain beating Xia Li or somebody like that who just is persona non grata on TV. I'm not worried for Zoe at all. And this was kind of her role at times in NXT too. They gave her pushes, but she was never champion there. And she was more of a serious heel gatekeeper there at her best. She was tag team champion for a while before injuries derailed that, but was doing that too. Tag team with Io Shirai. That was really fun. Odd couple, but yeah, as far as real stakes they can put on this, there's only so much you can do with Trish, I think. I don't know what her limitations are at this point, but I don't know. Maybe they will do hair. They won't do hair. I don't know, Wade.
Yeah, I don't know, Kyle. I mean, it's a loaded show. It might just be a match. And it doesn't, you know, I mean,
yeah.
So Zoe being in the ring with Becky and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think if Zoe's looking at what's gone on with her career, she is thrilled right now. Regardless of wins or losses or how she wins, she's in a really good position that I think is, well, Kelly, what do you think about her strengths and her weaknesses and how WWE on the main roster is capitalizing on those? And what else haven't we seen from her on the main roster that might still show up in coming months or years?
We've seen a lot of it, but she can cut a pretty okay, straightforward promo, even as a babyface, though more as a badass babyface, if they want her to do that. She can do that kind of thing where there's an unannounced match and she can add sizzle to a match that's going to happen that very night. She is very versatile in that I really dug her on both sides of the aisle. I do prefer her as a heel, but she had a lot of great moments as a babyface, and some of that came flooding back when I sort of reminded myself of that tag team she had with Io Shirai. She can be the straight man in a comedy scene. Io was doing more of the high concept silly stuff. They were a tag team where Zoe really liked Io, but Io didn't like Zoe at all. No matter how much affection Zoe showed her, it was pretty fun stuff until the injuries derailed that. But yeah, she can do. She's not going to be. She's not taking home any Emmys, but she can add sizzle to a match on her own pretty well.
Very good. Yeah, Kyle, back to you.
But we'll see what they do with Zoe Wilford after SummerSlam heading into it. So we'll see how they're going to push Zoe after SummerSlam. So that'd be interesting. How she'll do after SummerSlam heading into the fall. I think last thing I'll talk about is Judgment Day and Seth and the Finn Balor in general. I think from this, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, I was thinking like, okay, because they were all over the show. I think it's WWE as a whole. They are all over the show. Are they overexposed? I think that was the main thing. I heard someone else say that too as well. That saying are they overexposed and is it too much Judgment Day all over the show with whatever to do with Rhea, then the tag team scene, and then with Finn Balor, all of them all over the show. Is it overexposed or is it good enough? It is not, or is it? I'm not gonna be damaging. You know, saying, oh, it's too much of Judgment Day. Just like how they're trying to they're doing with Judgment Day on Raw, like they're doing Bloodline on SmackDown, because it's very. But since the Judgment Day isn't the Bloodline, people are not gonna be caring too much about them all over the show. So, what do you think about that? Having Judgment Day all over the show for the last few weeks, or the last month or two. So, how do you think about that? And is that a good thing that for some people to take to overexpose? What do you think about Judgment Day all over Monday Night Raw lately?
Yeah, so I mean, they're all a big part of SummerSlam. I mean, all four heels are, you know, in big situations going to that show. Do you think it stays that way after SummerSlam? Kelly, is it overexposure? Are they at risk of taking a good thing and kind of burning it up?
I find it very hard to use the term overexposed for people of talent. When I use that in wrestling, it usually is referring to somebody on NXT who is getting a push that they absolutely are not ready for yet, which we've seen numerous times in the last 2 years. I won't name names since I'm such a positive mood, so I don't want to get all negative on you, but there are acts that I would call overexposed for that reason. When you've got something as good as the Judgment Day, and it is about continuing to have strong TV ratings and to create hooks for next week, I don't think you can have too much of a good thing. I certainly don't think we're there yet. too much of a good thing can happen. NWO did turn out to be the way it was, after all. But I don't know if we're going to see another group in America where they add like 15, 20 people to the group. They do have that in Bullet Club. Bullet Club has like 17 members. But yeah, they, I think as long as it's kept to this, I don't like a faction of more than – I would never book a faction of more than five people myself. I think that's a really good number to top out at, and I think you can really water it down if you go much further than that. But for Judgment Day here, I feel like they found the right mix. They're there, and I won't think they're overexposed unless they start losing a lot and still – and, you know, not in as important matches and still commanding this much TV time. I think at this point, though, it's everything's earned.
I'm not worried right now, Kyle, about them because everybody's just rising to the occasion. But you're not wrong to bring up the potential that, you know, if we're in December and Judgment Day are being leaned on this much, you know, it might get to the point where people are like, okay, let's give some TV time to other people and give us a little break. From them, but right now it makes sense, and I don't know. I mean, it's like everything so far has been positive. That doesn't mean it's sustainable that people want to see this much of them, but Dominic's so over, and Priest has risen to the occasion, and Rhea Ripley has been a star for a while and is being elevated by this, and Finn Balor were raving about having the best stretch of his main roster career, or WWE overall career. So, I mean, it's so far so good. I just say enjoy what's happening well, and you know, just having the back of your mind, you know, maybe they need to rotate them out a little. You know, there's something to be said for leaving people wanting more. And but you also don't want to lose momentum. If everybody's red hot and you just take them out of circulation, you know, I mean, people are buying money to see Judgment or are buying tickets and spending money to see Judgment Day right now and to, you know, see Dominic and Rhea play off each other. So, I mean, my tendency is to kind of ride it out until you start sensing maybe you're overdoing it. And I just don't think they're there yet, Kyle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. I think Judgment Day is fine. I think I was just hearing from other people saying that. But I personally still like Judgment Day. I think they're great. They're both entertaining thing on Raw, so I enjoy them. So, yeah, I enjoy what they're doing. It's good for Finn Balor, too, getting this type of exposure because he never had this exposure on Raw before. So I'm kind of glad he's getting this exposure. Same with Damian and Rhea. They have getting they earn what they've – they just give it what they're earned because they – all three of them are great. And so I am glad to see it in all of them. So I'm happy to see them over every week, so – but I was looking it up because I heard other people talk about that. They're going to be overexposed. But I personally like them, and I'm glad that they're getting the attention that they need. Even Seth Rollins, too, as World Heavyweight Champion, probably getting the recognition that he deserves, too, being champion, being now the top guy on Raw. So I'm happy about everything that's going on Raw right now with Judgment Day and Seth Rollins, and I'm looking forward to Balor and Seth at SummerSlam. So, but that's it. Thanks for the call.
Cool. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. All right. Let's jump to Azan, who's from St. Louis email and has some questions or comments. I said, Waiting Kelly Raw was a good set the stage show for SummerSlam tonight. After Dominic Mysterio won tonight in the recent loss against Finn and Gunther, do you think the idea of Sami Zayn as the main event guy chasing the world championship is gone at this stage? Yeah. I mean, I think Sami's at a different place right now. Doesn't mean they can't rev him up again. But you can't keep everybody who surprises you by sort of, I don't want to say overachieving, but like being more over than he's ever been before. That was magic. It was a great storyline. But you got to move on. You don't want to, like, Sami can't be involved with the Bloodline forever, and when he's not, there's going to be a downturn in terms of what he's doing. But so far, I think it's working out well. You know, him running out at the end was good use of him. He's, you know, still going to be popular, and I think he and KO have good chemistry. So I'm not worried, but, like, I just don't think it's fair. It's like, oh, there's a lull after WrestleMania. Well, right, because they're successful at making WrestleMania feel like a bigger time of the year than any other time in their year. So it'd be weird if there wasn't a lull afterwards. That's not a flaw. That's a feature of WrestleMania. You want to mitigate it as much as you can, but to say, oh, WWE screws up after WrestleMania because there's a lull, well, there better be, because otherwise WrestleMania didn't do its job. So for me, Sammy's still in a good place, but the way that they're utilizing him right now does, and I think this gets to Azan's point, does tend to indicate they're not like protecting him for a world title singles run. But you know, I think they still value him. You know, he can be a little much behind the scenes, but they still value him and want to utilize him, and they know he's popular and good in the ring. Kelly, what do you think?
Sammy is somebody you can heat up so fast. He can do so much of that on his own, and the writers seem to be inspired enough by him to give him a boost as well. So, he's not there right now, but he can be there at just about any time. Whatever spot in the card you need him to fill, he's going to create fun TV. If it needs to be funny, then that's great. If it needs to be serious, then that's great. He does it all. I were in charge of the company today, and there was somebody that I had to tag as cannot be fired ever. It would be him, because I know that I can set my watch to what he's going to do in front of the cameras at any rate. So, yeah, I'm not worried about Sammy. I don't know if they'll ever look for that lightning in a bottle again, but they can, and if they find a reason, he'll pass the test with flying colors, because that's what he does.
Number two, he says, what do you think about Apollo Crews at this stage of his career? He's having a good run in NXT last year, but then he was called back up to Raw and was in the, and now is in the same spot as before. Boy, tonight was, you should have sold your Apollo Crews stock a month ago based on how he's being treated and portrayed here. I mean, he got to talk a little bit. He got to stand up to Damian Priest, but boy, he did not get protected or put in a strong showing. Kelly, what have you thought about the journey that he's been on, including a chance to try to refresh and regroup in NXT? Did it seem like anything went his way there where you would have expected something better than what we saw tonight?
So Apollo was in that match that was the first match after about an hour. And as they were doing these scenes, some of which were better than others, my mind's wandering a little bit and I'm starting to think of Apollo. And I was like, is he going to be even on this show? And I dare say maybe it would have been better if he wasn't for him. So I don't know. They brought him down and they had him actually state that he wanted to go after the championship, after a couple of other things first. And in the end, he was brought up faster than I thought. While he was there, they did some really weird high concept stuff with him where he could see the future and he would manifest the future and like even solve the storyline because of something that he saw before anybody else could. It gets weird, folks. But Crews had stuff going on there that they did not bring back up to the main roster, as far as I can tell. He's just a guy. And if that was going to be the use of him, and you brought him down, like, what was the reason? I guess the only reason is then now he seems fresh. And so you have somebody who's low, low-level gatekeeper, step-over guy, who seems at least somewhat fresh. So there, it feels like there's something to beat him. But I don't know. I don't know what it was all for. He went down there. He had some really, really good matches. And he was pushed. While he was there, he was upper mid-card. So I don't know. I don't know why all that happened. It seems like in this era, there's more of a clear reasoning. And if it doesn't work out, they just get rid of him. But so far, I don't see why they did what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you look at Apollo Crews and go, man, he could be top tier. I mean, it's just he hasn't shown that. You know, I mean, he just at any time. But it seems like they could do more than what he got tonight. You know, they could protect him more. But, yeah, I mean, if his job is to be the likable, you know, guy who loses to main eventers, but, you know, it, you know, has half the time sort of a mid-card feud and maybe he wins, maybe he loses. I mean, that's probably where he's going to land right now. And I like him better as a regular guy than some, you know, gimmick, you know, painted on top of him that just doesn't feel authentic or feels too gimmicky or feels too like 1994. You know, I mean, it's just like there was something about that last thing that just didn't feel modern.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I agree. It was something that they tried. Not sad that didn't go to the main roster, but I thought something might go to the main roster.
And finally, Ludwig Kaiser is amazing in his role right now, and I believe he adds so much to Gunther's act. We haven't talked about Gunther and Drew, and talked about the everything that they did with promoting that match. And so, Kelly, talk about that. What do you think of, first of all, Zahn's question about Ludwig Kaiser, but also the hype for Gunther and Drew?
Gunther's title reign has been so long that we are hearing the name Pedro Morales on TV. Mm. I'm in disbelief that is happening. And it's just so cool. And I love Gunther and what he brings to the table, and what he does in the ring. I share this emailer's, affection for Ludwig Kaiser. I think that he's just a perfect hype man, and specifically is the perfect hype man for this act. And Drew, I thought, played his role well with acting like Ludwig could be the guy. And then we had Corey Graves doing a pretty good impression of Ludwig. Very strange. But
it got a little much, but it was good.
I couldn't believe he did it for as long as he did. He said he was going to do it for the whole match, and then when it went on 30 seconds, I was like, oh, he wasn't kidding.
Yeah. I just wanted Gunther to just turn around and just smack him. But
I know, that would have been pretty funny. But yeah, Kaiser is just an awesome hype man. I found myself thinking, you know, you look like you do. You don't necessarily look like that next level star either because of size, because of specific look, because of whatever. But you got to be happy if you get there, and you can be Pete Dunne as Butch, and if you can be Ludwig Kaiser, just being an ancillary character to this major player. And Kaiser is good enough that if they wanted to heat him up and make him a bigger deal, I think that they could give it a shot. And I think I had all the same feelings as this emailer, because I was even thinking, will his ship come in? Will they give him a big shot, or will he have to go to a smaller company to get it? I just think he's great in the role. Vinci, I like, but they don't lean on him for the words. They lean on him to do ridiculous feats of strength that don't look like they should come out of a guy that size. But yeah, Kaiser, if Kaiser went down, if he went down with injury, that would be a bigger blow to this group than Vinci going down with injury.
All right, let's. There's a few segments we haven't talked about yet. We'll hit them semi-rapid fire and wrap up the show. First, a couple NXT vets in Bronson Reed and Tommaso Ciampa, with Shinsuke Nakamura involved in this storyline. Ciampa voluntarily leaving the ring to yell at Shinsuke when he told him earlier in the show not to show up, and that gave Reed an opening to take advantage and win. What'd you think of what they did, but broaden it out? What do you think of what they're doing with Ciampa and Bronson at this point, again, based on where you thought watching NXT that they would land on the main roster?
I think this is similar to where I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be slow burns and see what they had. Ciampa, not so much a slow burn as he's an older dude. He doesn't have a lot of years ahead of him, so topping out at this level probably does make sense. This was the only time in the show where my Xfinity app failed for a few minutes, so I didn't see the ending, so I had to read what you wrote about the end.
So I know
what happened, but this was the only place. But I knew what was going to happen anyway, because they had already told us what was going to happen with Shinsuke being in that scene. Bronson Reed is a more interesting recent case to me, because he very recently was in New Japan and was pushed very, very hard while he was there. Like most non-natives, he was not given a contract. He was just given a push, and they hoped that he would stick around for a while. He beat Kazuchika Okada while he was there, so they had big plans, or at least saw him as a bigger player, to the point where during the G1 a couple of nights ago, Kevin Kelly brought up Bronson Reed. He brought him up by the name Jonah, of course, but he brought him up just because he was in such a big spot in the company in the tournament last year. So I'm hoping that they figure out the right balance with him because I think it would be easy to plug him into a Kane or Big Show role where you turn him a lot because you can move him, have him be a semi-big guy. But I think his potential could be greater. Not that if anybody would love to be Kane, anyone. If you told him he was going to have Kane's career, I'm sure he'd be thrilled. But I think that he can be bigger. So, I like this as a TV feud right now, and I hope there are slightly bigger steps ahead of both guys.
We also had the latest with Chad Gable and Otis and Maxine talking about her first singles match next week in Valhalla. Have you enjoyed this, Kelly? And what do you think about their use of the Viking Raiders in Valhalla, opposite of clearly now kind of an audible being called Gable and Otis as baby faces with Maxine?
Ooh, six people, and Chad Gable's got to do the talking for all six because, damn. I like this as a TV feud just fine, but Chad's got to do a lot of heavy lifting here. When they brought up Maxine Dupree, I don't even remember what name they used for her on NXT because she only appeared on TV, I want to say, 2, 3, 4 times as somebody in the corner of Von Wagner. And she was so bad on the mic that I was a little stunned that they brought her up. She's better than that now, but I don't know. I think this is an inoffensive, lower-level feud. Love Valhalla in the ring, but on the mic, she peaked a long time ago, unfortunately. But Chad Gable getting TV time is worth it for me, regardless of the rest, so I guess I'm on board.
All right, then we had Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. Promos from both. They're going to have a fight, not a match, whatever that turns out to mean. What do you think? What do you think of what they did tonight and again, the broader feud that they're building up for SummerSlam?
I thought that what they did tonight was fine. I think, as often, the lines they gave to Ronda were pretty good. Her performance was okay. She said, "I can't have a fight with Shayna Baszler. I'm going to have the fight because when I have a fight, it is – the fight." I think a lot of different talents could have done better with that line, but I think it's a good line. As far as Shayna, when she got her time, which was before, of course, I thought that was more interesting. I am hopeful that this is the next big step forward for Shayna. I think she's been underutilized ever since she was rumored to win that Royal Rumble, then instead Charlotte won by last eliminating Shayna Baszler. But I think that she can be a big boon to this division if they let her. So, not the stuff I would have taken away from this show, mm-hmm. but if it's booked properly, I think they can really have something with Shayna, because I feel like with Ronda could have been Brock Lesnar, but I feel like the work has not been there to continue to be Brock Lesnar. And I think that we're starting to get diminishing returns on her. Whereas Lesnar still feels like an appointment feud. I hope that Shayna takes something big from this.
And Paul Logan and Ricochet. Yes, Paul Logan is obnoxious and he's, plays that up. But we have Ricochet giving the promos of his career, like, doing a better job on the microphone than I think he's ever done. What do you think about their use of Logan Paul? But maybe more newsworthy, what do you think about what's going on with Ricochet right now, and if he's talking his way into a more consistent push now that he had that big ill-advised spot with Logan Paul that went viral, and that leads to, of course, a feud?
You know, it's weird. I have done a lot of shows with you over the years, and it seems like Ricochet is always on them. And we're like, man, I wish he was better, but he's this is where he is. And we've talked about, like, he didn't even really have a desire to get better on the mic, it seemed. And I feel the same as you. He's not, like, one of the great guys on the mic. That's not in him and never will be. Left that to his girlfriend, Samantha. She's wonderful. She's one of the best parts of the show. But yeah, whether it's inspiration here or it's just the fact that he could not produce until he was actually put in a bigger spot, and then he realized he had to produce, so the pressure's being better for him. The fact that they're even trusting him with a live mic in front of the crowd, not backstage, not pre-taped, and this much time on the mic is really significant for what they think of him. My feeling has always been that somebody like Logan Paul, who is kind of a Brock Lesnar character right now, and they can get something of him every time he's on, is that Logan Paul has to win every now and then, so his losses mean something, so this is one of his wins. But the longer this has gone on, the more I can actually see excuses to make Ricochet win. And if at any rate, if he has to lose, I hope he comes out of it being given something, because he is doing the best work of his career on the mic.
And then finally, Cody Rhodes cutting a utterly timeless babyface, straightforward promo. He's confident. He's matter of fact. He lays out who Brock Lesnar is, who he is. The great line, his mistake wasn't beating me up in front of my mom. His mistake was that he he left him breathing. And then he took a dramatic deep breath to emphasize, yeah, I'm still breathing. And I didn't poke the bear. I'm slapping the bear and telling him to come get it. I just, again, really like this from Cody. And he just closed with, I know how this chapter on Lesnar isn't pretty when it's going to be written, but I know how it ends, and it's with me pinning him. I end this. I mean, Cody isn't doing meta nonsense. He's not wandering off into other areas. You know, it's a disciplined, reined in, focused Cody right now. And when he was in AEW, I said more than once, there is a really good promo in there, but there's this 40 to 60% where he just can't stay focused and on point. And I thought WWE with their infrastructure and how, you know, tightly they monitor promos, that Cody would be somebody who benefited. Some people get hurt by that. I think Cody benefited. I enter this into more evidence. I think he's doing really good, solid. I don't like MGF. MGF is doing like fantastic promos, and he's super interesting. But it seems like with MGF, sometimes you think his desire is to go onto social media later in the night and see everyone talking about him. And with Cody, it's like, I just want to sell tickets. I just want to be a babyface. And it's not about like shocking people and getting people to talk on social media. And I like that. I mean, there's room for a variety of approaches, and MGF's a heel. And so, you know, obviously it makes a little more sense to go that route. What have you thought, Kelly, of Cody so far and the build to the Cody Lesnar match?
I feel the same. I want to know where this Cody was when he was out there trying to make something bigger of these companies that were not WWE. You talk about the meta, and I just remember Cody as part of a multi-man in New Japan and going up to the American announce team and saying, we go over in 12 minutes with a trio of super kicks. And that wasn't the finish, but the point was, he's just, it's pure lingo, like being spat out there. And I just don't understand what made somebody the greatest maintainers of kayfabe and one of the, and just the guy who really got it. What made him want to be that way and break those established rules? I don't know if he just needed a director to slap him on the wrist when he was stepping over the line, or what he needed, or if he needed the right opponent. But yeah, this is a Cody worth cheering for. And he is now on a show where he can win the championship, because he's not part of the Bloodline story, so he wasn't going to win that one. But I don't know. I don't want to gush too much or be too maudlin, but I'm super glad he found this. It seemed like he was on the verge at one point 10, 12 years ago in a Money in the Bank that everybody thought he was going to win, but he lost to his partner. Aaron Stevens is his name now.
Damian Sandow.
Yeah. Thank you. And that ended up being the way. And it was a good finish. It was a good match. But it seemed like that was Cody's moment, and he was right on the verge of breaking out. And it's very cool to see now. But I wonder sometimes if we're going to talk about him as his generation's Lex Luger. So there you go.
All right, very good. Kelly, anything else in your notes for Rob tonight that you want to bring up?
I think I got it all. Lots of pro-Judgment Day things written down. Tribal Combat, live in Saxon. Yeah, I didn't get much of a chance to say it, but we're hard on Liv. So I just want to say this was really wonderful by her. Just the crying, she sold it. Gigi Dolin did her best thing ever in NXT when she was turned, when her partner, JC Jane, turned on her. And there were tears, because not only was she being beaten down, but her best friend was turning on her. It's like she got it. But Liv really got how big this needed to be. And just the greatest thing she's done on the main roster. I think that is it. I also wrote down that a whole lot of people said challenge accepted tonight. That was their inside joke. Challenge accepted. That's the one other note I had.
All right, cool. Well, Kelly, always great talking with you. Always fun having you on the post show. Thanks for doing this.
Yes, indeed. Hope to do it again soon. And super looking forward to SummerSlam.
Yes. And how about Great American Bash?
Yeah. It's been NXT had some lean months, but it has gotten stronger, partially because of the stunt casting with some of the main roster guys coming down, and partially just because it seems like storytelling has been a little more cogent. And honestly, they were hurt by a very large amount of injuries, especially to the women's division. So stuff's getting a little better there as far as I can tell. And I'm psyched for Great American Bash, not on the same level of SummerSlam, but
yeah,
I'm not supposed to be, am I? So there you go.
No, exactly. All right. Very good. Thanks everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you Wednesday night after Dynamite.